We're back on Big Board Sports. Roger Wiland, Michael Johnson Jr. on this Thursday wild card weekend in the NFL. And let's see what kind of a run the New England Patriots can make. And it starts at home against the Chargers. And it's the Sunday night game at 8 o'clock on NBC. And Evan Lazar covers these, the beat writer for the New England Patriots, covers them day in and day out with ESPN.com, and we always enjoy his insight here on 104.5 Team ESPN Radio. Evan, it's Roger and MJ up in Albany, New York.
Guys, how we doing?
We're good. Thanks, we're good. Vrabel's coach of the year, right? We got to start there. Vrabel coach of the year, right?
You'd have my vote. You know, I think it's maybe one of the more competitive coach of the year fields that I can remember.
Yeah.
At least, you know, in recent time. I mean, what Mike McDonald's done in Seattle, what Liam Cohen's done in Jacksonville, yeah, what Ben Johnson's done in Chicago. I mean, there's a lot of really good candidates, probably more good candidates for that than I'd say for MVP. So it's going to be a tough field for him. But I think what we saw here was just the immediate turnaround from a team that really nobody thought had much talent last year to a playoff team in the number two seed in the AFC. You don't really get much better than that in terms of a coaching job.
No, it absolutely does not. I think we all thought in the preseason, Evan, and we had you on in the preseason, that this would be an improved New England Patriots team with a new coach, but I don't think anybody saw this kind of a season coming. But here we are, 14-3 New England, home against the LA Chargers, 11-6 New England favored by 3.5. Break down the matchup for me.
Well, I think it comes down to two things. You know, one is that Chargers offensive line has been banged up all year and has been a weak point of their team. But the Patriots have, I would say, an average, a middling pass rush, not a great dominant pass rush. So, you know, which one of those weaknesses kind of wins out when the Chargers have the football is going to be really big in this game. You know, the Patriots have paid Milton Williams and Christian Barmore a lot of money on their defensive line, and it's time for them to go earn it on Sunday night, because they need those two guys in the middle to truly be dominant and really control the line of scrimmage and get to Justin Herbert and affect the game that way. So I think that's going to be a big key going into this one. And then for the Patriots offense, I think it's mostly just, can they continue what they did during the regular season and what is going to be Drake May's first ever playoff game? And you just don't know going into it. And that's not saying that he's going to, you know, have a setback or anything like that, but you don't know going into it exactly how he's going to react to this big of a stage and this big of a moment, because he's never been there. So I think that's the other thing too, is, you know, do they have some jitters early on? You know, is he a little bit too amped up? I think those are some of the questions people are asking around here this week.
Evan, from an offensive perspective, what should Patriots fans game plan from what you're hearing, or maybe your own gut reaction telling you here for the offense? How's it going to look? Are you going to see Drake May, since it's his first playoff game, a little more timid approach? Are we going to see Ramondre Stevenson, Trevion Henderson do a bulk of the work running the football? Or are we going to see more of a passing attack from Drake May trying to get Stephon Diggs and Hunter Henry down the field against this Chargers secondary?
Yeah, I mean, their run game has really come along over the last month or so. You know, they're number one in the league in yards per carry since week 15. They're averaging over 6 yards per attempt. But this is a pretty good Chargers run defense and a pretty physical front for LA up front. So I do look at their passing game against the Chargers zone coverages. You know, the Chargers run zone about 81% of the time. It's fifth in the league. They run a lot of quarters, you know, with those four deep defenders over the top of the field. And Drake May all season long, and Josh McDaniels too, when you start talking about zone, you often bring up scheme and getting guys open within the zones. Drake May is number one in the league in passer rating this season against zone coverage. So I think that's going to be you know, where they're going to try to attack early, because if you can get a lead on this Chargers team, and then you can force Justin Herbert to drop back 40, 45 times behind that offensive line, that feels like how the Patriots can get this game in on their terms. If they let the Chargers kind of hang around and they make it more of a slog or a rock fight, I think that's where the Chargers can win, whereas the Patriots can kind of put offense and put points, I should say, up on the board in a hurry early on in this game, and now the Chargers are kind of playing from that position of you know, being unbalanced offensively, which is where I think the Patriots want to get them.
How do you think Drake May will handle the big moment?
you know what? I think he's going to handle it just fine because, you know, the main reason is just how cool he is. Honestly, you know, he doesn't get super high or super low. And a lot of the guys that, you know, you talked to, Stephon Diggs was talking yesterday that they would almost like to see him get meaner sometimes and get a little bit more animated because he's just so even keeled. But I think that is going to lend itself pretty well for him not, you know, overhyping this game in his head and coming out with those pregame jitters, like I mentioned. Now, he has talked a little bit about in the past battling, being a little bit too amped up at the beginning of big games. And I think that's going to be something that I'm going to put mostly on Josh McDaniels in the play calling. Can they get him integrated into this game as quickly as possible? So you know, you asked me about the run game earlier. Like, I think that it's important for Drake May to get into a rhythm early on in this football game, throwing the ball, whether that's, you know, getting him outside the pocket, whether that's getting him some easy layups early on, whatever the case may be. It doesn't have to be, you know, the downfield bombs that we're all love and used to seeing from Drake May. It can be some, you know, little bunnies here and there, but maybe his legs being involved too early on in this game. I just think they got to get him settled in to the game early, because if he comes out and he's a little bit amped up and he's, you know, then doesn't get into a rhythm and they go three and out or something like that, that's when I would start to worry a little bit.
Evan, you mentioned how Vrabel's your selection for Coach of the Year. How about MVP? You got Matthew Stafford, Drake May are the conversation. I know you're a Patriots guy, so it's you've been around May all year, but you had a vote. Who'd be your pick for MVP?
Well, I'll take the homer pick on that one too. You know, I think with Drake May that the biggest thing that it stands out to me, and I'm not a Stafford hater by any means. I mean, he's terrific, and if he wins the MVP, then it's not going to be this like blasphemy, like, you know, this whole thing that we hear now. I feel like everybody's so on one side of it, and I would totally understand for voters to look at Matthew Stafford and the 46 touchdowns and vote him for MVP. But I think the level of difficulty that you see from Drake May, and then all the preconceived notions about this Patriots team back in, you know, July and August when we were getting ready for the season, and the way that the Patriots have taken this flight here is because of Drake May. You know, he is the one that is elevating a supporting cast that, let's face it, most people like you and I thought was going to be middling at best. You know, they've really played at a top five in the league rate, whether you want to go by scoring or EPA or whatever the case may be. And I just think that the Rams, we kind of expected the Rams to be here, right? Like, we expected the Rams and Matthew Stafford to have the weapons and to have Sean McVay and to have Puka Nacua and Devontae Adams and a good running game. And that's where they're at. The Patriots are here because of Mike Vrabel and Drake May. And I think both those guys should be rewarded for it.
We'll see if they can get the next step and get a wild card win and continue their incredible season. Evan Lazar, always a pleasure. Thank you for a few minutes here on ESPN Radio in Albany.
Anytime, guys. Anytime.
Thank you, Evan. All right, when we come back, what's going on with the Giants? Is it now all the attention has turned to John Harbaugh? That is the guy that they want. Will they land him? We'll ask Paul Schwartz from the New York Post, New York Giants beat writer, next on 104.5 The Team, ESPN Radio. All right, we're back on Big Board Sports. Roger Wyman, Michael Johnson Jr. Lots going on the coaching's front in the National Football League. In fact, just came out that
Mike McDaniel
yeah, out in Miami. That will affect Anthony Weaver, our guy from Saratoga.
That's right.
Who was the defensive coordinator. He was of the Miami Dolphins. He's going to be interviewing for a number of different positions, by the way, coming up. We talked to Anthony Weaver this week. He's got interviews on Friday with Arizona, Saturday Atlanta, and Monday he interviews with the Baltimore Ravens. All right, what's going on with the Giants? Nobody better to lay it on the line with all of what's happening with the G-men right now than Paul Schwartz and the coaching front there from the New York Post, longtime New York Giants beat writer, and joins us here on 104.5 Team ESPN Radio. Paul,
when people ask me, well, the season's over, do you go on vacation now? I've been hearing that for 30 years.
Yeah.
Well, season's over, you go on vacation now. And I'm like,
No,
and the worse the season is, the less of a vacation it is. You know what I mean? I mean, when the team wins the Super Bowl, which I've covered twice, you know, you worry about other things, who's going to stay, all this and that, you know, endorsements. And when the team loses, you know, 14 games one year and 13 games the next year, and now they're looking for head coach, you're involved in something called a coaching search. And I would say, guys, this cycle might be the most historic coaching cycle ever, ever.
Oh, I agree. It's wild out there right now. And with the it became even crazier, Paul, when John Harbaugh was fired in Baltimore. Because I was loving on Kevin Stefanski and still am, to be honest with you. But now with Harbaugh being available, I don't know where he wants to go. But I have to assume, Paul, that the Giants are going to make a strong push for John Harbaugh.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I mean, you know, but people say, you know, okay, now he goes to the top of their list. I don't think that's accurate. I mean, he goes to the top of everyone's list for the most part. Now, hear me out. By next week, there are a lot of people who think that if Matt LaFleur, if the Packers lose, he could be fired, okay? That is an incredibly strong candidate in the market. There are people who still think if the Steelers lose that Mike Tomlin could be on the market after 19 years, which sounds insane, but John Harbaugh is on the market after 18 years in Baltimore. And there are people who think that if the Eagles lose in the first round with this group of candidates out there, don't forget, John Harbaugh once worked for the Eagles, right? That with this candidate list out there, that if the Eagles lay an egg at home in a playoff game after a very lackluster season, oh, by the way, coming off a Super Bowl victory, that the Eagles could move on from Nick Sirianni. And so you imagine if the and another one, Sean McDermott in Buffalo, it's not out of the question that he gets canned if the Bills lose in the first round of the playoffs. It's really not. I mean, will all these happen? No. Will some of these happen? I bet yes. I bet some of those happen. And so you have major jobs opening up. You have major head coaches being available. You know, right now, Harbaugh is the king. There's no question about it. Yes, the day that I'm writing about Kevin Stefanski having dinner with the Giants and meeting with them tomorrow, this was, Tuesday and Wednesday, at 5 p.m. on Tuesday, John Harbaugh's fired. And it's like, okay, you have to reset everything. So, yeah, I mean, at this point, John Harbaugh has not even scheduled interviews yet. That'll start coming next week. So he is the, somebody told me he is the domino. And until he decides all these dominoes, you know, the Giants are not going to hire Kevin Stefanski before they know what John Harbaugh is going to do.
Right. And we don't know the whole thing right now, at least in my opinion, is no one knows for sure what John Harbaugh is thinking. Like, is there a team that he really wants to go to? Because whatever team that is, they're going to make it happen. Does he want to come in and be the next head coach of the New York Giants? I don't think we know the answer to that.
No one knows the answer to that. There can be speculation. Look, there are some things we know. The New York Football Giant franchise is still in high regard. The team has been bad. The franchise is in high regard. I think there's universal excitement that if you would come into the Giants, you have a quarterback in Jackson Dart. That's a big plus. There's some salary cap space. There is definitely a strong front group on defense, and you have the fifth pick in the draft. And now you have John, you know, what used to be a very stable and secure situation with John Mara as the co-owner. John Mara's sick, so that will have to be looked into by the next, you know, whoever is interviewing for the job. You know, what's John Mara's health status? Sadly, and unfortunately, that is part of the equation. But yeah, look, I mean, while I was waiting on hold with you guys, the Dolphins job opened up.
Yeah. Yep, just open.
Why would the Dolphin job be any good? Well, Stephen Ross, I heard that Stephen Ross and John Harbaugh have a relationship. Stephen Ross has all the money in the world. You have people like living in Miami. There's no state tax there. You know, so somebody told me the other day they think that the Titans are quietly a very attractive job for a guy like Harbaugh, who, because everyone liked Cam Ward coming out of the draft, and there are some front office connections there, and that his wife would prefer Nashville over New York. So this is what we're getting into now. You know, we're getting into the weeds of what people prefer. You know, someone, some you know, you mentioned Anthony Weaver. Anthony Weaver is not going to have his choice of four jobs or five jobs, you know what I mean? And people say, why would someone take that job? Because there are 32 of them, and if you're offered one of those 32, you're hard-pressed not to take it, right? It's just the way it is. John Harbaugh is going to be offered multiple jobs, I would think, and he can do what he wants. So where his wife wants to live or who the owner is or who he's aligned with in the front office, he can do what the hell he wants, and then everything will fall into place. I mean, this you know, this list is going to be incredible. It could grow, and you know what? Someone told me it's going to be a long process. So if you want to call me this time next week, I don't think we'll have an answer.
Paul, you know, there's been a lot of criticism but within the Giants fans, but what else is new with that? Of course, they're frustrated with the team's record, but Joe Shane still being the general manager. We've heard him be quoted in saying he wants to cast a wide net, and you've alluded to all the great and illustrious potential coaching candidates in there. And you know, the results aren't necessarily there on paper for Joe Shane. What do you make of him still being the general manager and leading the charge, if you will, to pick and the ultimately have the Giants' next selection for head coach, like you said, in the coming weeks?
Well, I think there's a very, very small chance it's a detriment to the next head coach, you know, bringing him in. Small. Not impossible. You know, it's not impossible. I mean, if there were no GM and no head coach, you could say to John Harbaugh, who do you want as your GM? And who do you want as your staff? And, you know, you want us to change our colors to green? We'll do that too. You know what I mean? You can give them everything. You know, but I you know, I know someone from Kevin Stefanski's camp, and they said working with Joe Shane is no problem. You know, that's not going to be a big deal. You know, for the most part, I think Joe Shane is respected, not among Giants fans, but in the industry. I think he's fine. He's not this kind of, you know, everyone is hearkening back to last year with Liam Cohen and Jacksonville, where he basically interviewed for the job and said, you know, I'm not going to take the job if the GM, Trent Baalke, is the GM. And so they said, okay, we like Liam Cohen. We're going to get rid of our GM. Trent Baalke had a very bad reputation around the league, so that was not a shock to anybody. That doesn't happen very often. You know what I mean? That doesn't happen. Now, John Harbaugh does not come on the market very often. You know what I mean? So, you know, and you know, Mike Tomlin or LaFleur or, you know, any of these other guys who might, you know, these guys don't come on the market very often. You know, a few days ago, Kevin Stefanski was still is a two-time NFL Coach of the Year and a very, very strong candidate to come on the market. And, you know, he's been dwarfed and could be even more dwarfed in the coming days. So, look, I think the Giants did not want to start over again. They believe in Joe Shane. They don't believe in the record and some of the draft picks, but they did not want to start over. I don't think the key is, will he be a detriment to bringing in a top head coach where he says, I don't want to go there unless, you know, if Joe Shane is there. I think there's a very, very small chance of that happening.
Yeah, I think Joe Shane is locked into where he is right now. Well, it's not going to happen today or tomorrow, but Paul, they just got to get this right. I mean, this is such a big hire because, as you said, on the playing field, they're one of the worst teams in the NFL the last couple of years, and it's a storied franchise. And I've covered them in two Super Bowls, probably the same two. I covered them in Glendale, Arizona, when they beat New England. I was in Indianapolis when they beat New England, and we haven't been back to a Super Bowl since. So they're long overdue to put a good team on the field, and they need the right head coach, and they haven't had one, in my opinion, since Tom Coughlin.
No, it's look, I mean, there are reasons why those guys failed. I mean, right, this does not seem like the year where they're going to take a chance on a coordinator.
No.
You know, I mean, there's some good ones out there. You know what I mean? There's some good ones. You know, Clint Kubiak, you know, they listed, you know, Lou Anarumo was going to interview Raheem Morris, who was a head coach and a coordinator. He interviewed today. Mike McCarthy's coming in. You know, so I mean, Jeff Hafley with an Albany connection, Siena connection, you know, he's going to get interviews. I don't think the Giants have put in a request for him yet. You know, he's still, you know, occupied in the playoffs with the Packers. But it doesn't seem to me that this is, you know, let's just take a flyer on Jesse Minter, who I hear great things about, you know, the Michigan defensive coordinator and the Chargers defensive coordinator. I hear great things about him. You know, he could end up being a head coach somewhere, maybe even in Baltimore. But, you know, I just don't think this is the year for that with all these other guys. Now, what's going to happen, excuse me, guys, is that, look, Harbaugh is going to pick a team, and if he doesn't pick the Giants, everyone's going to say, oh, my God, they blew it. You know, Joe Shane blew it. They couldn't get Harbaugh. Hobart's going to go where he wants to go, and then you go to the next guy. You know, Antonio Pierce is coming in for an interview tomorrow.
That. Yeah.
You know, in another cycle, he'd be very intriguing. You know, I mean, he's beloved in the Giants organization. This cycle, I don't know about that, but you have to pick your spots. You know, they're going to complete the Rooney Rule requirements of interviewing two external minority candidates live. That will, you know, with Raheem Morris and Antonio Pierce, that will satisfy that. So technically, if John Harbaugh on Friday wants to say, let me come to New Jersey, let me talk to you guys, and if all good, we'll sign. I mean, that could happen, but it won't, because John Harbaugh is going to make the rounds, I would think. Yes, this is crucial, vital, whatever, you know, adjective you want to use. They have to get this right. And there will be candidates out there who can make it right. You know, hopefully one of them picks the Giants, and hopefully they get the one that they want.
Yeah, there's a lot of options for John Harbaugh. But I truly believe that there are a lot of reasons why John Harbaugh would want to become the next head coach of the Giants. Is that fair?
Yes, it's fair. It's definitely fair. You know what I mean? I mean, like you said, you can't, but like, that's what I mean. When people say, well, why would he pick the Giants, and why would he pick the Titans over the Giants? And it's like, there are reasons why guys do that, you know, when they have options, because of, you know, their comfort level with someone in the building, with living in Nashville versus, I mean, I don't think living in New York, New Jersey, I mean, he's not going to be living in, you know, at Times Square, you know, on 42nd Street. He's going to be living in a mansion in a beautiful New Jersey suburb and driving 20 minutes to the, you know, to the Giants complex near MetLife Stadium. So you can never go into New York if you want. But, you know, the New York media is not going to be seen as, oh, great, I love the challenge of the New York media. Or, you know, I mean, look at the Giants. You know, any candidate can look at the Giants and Jets and say, they just grind and spit out coaches left and right in that market. You know, I'll go to Nashville or I'll go to Miami. The expectations will be a little different. So, yes, there are certainly football reasons and, you know, historical franchise reasons why the Giants will be attractive. I mean, you cannot discount Jackson Dart in this. You really can't. I mean, I don't think any coach that comes in will say, yeah, I don't love him. I mean, anyone who met him on the recruiting trail will love him. And anybody who watched his tape this year will say, I can work with that. So that's a big plus. You know, now they can use that fifth pick on anything other than a quarterback. So, yes, I would not say, I mean, I've not got inside John Harbaugh's camp yet. You know, he's a hard camp to get into right now. You know, he just was fired a couple of days ago, but, yes, there will be reasons why he will like the Giants, but I think there will be reasons why he likes other teams as well. And right now I'm not willing to say, oh, yeah, the Giants are the favorite coming out of the clubhouse. I won't say that right now.
We'll see how it all plays out, Paul. I know you're a bit busy time, and right, you're certainly not on vacation now that the season is over, anything but. So we'll let you go. Keep banging away at the coaching position. We'll be reading what you have to say in the New York Post and all your other platforms. But thank you for joining us, as always, in Albany.
Okay, guys. Well, I'm sure we'll talk again when this is all settled.
Yes, we will. Thank you, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Appreciate you. All right, Paul Schwartz, New York Post. Doesn't get any better than that. That's the very latest. The Giants would love John Harbaugh, but so does every other team that has an opening, and no one knows yet what John Harbaugh is thinking. Harbaugh just got fired in Baltimore. He's taking the rest of the week off. He's not doing anything until next week. So whatever Harbaugh is doing, he's kicking back and thinking about everything that's happening and watching the Miami job open. And Schwartz brings up a great point. I mean, if Pittsburgh gets knocked out, is there a chance that Tomlin is gone? If the Bills get knocked out in the wild card round, is there a chance that McDermott is gone? Yes. Is there a chance that Philadelphia gets knocked out and they get destroyed and nobody loving
it
on Sirianni?
Is.
Does he get fired in Philadelphia?
Maybe the Giants should be more patient.
I mean, this is as wild a time in the NFL,
yep,
with head coaching vacancies. And every year when the season ends, you got coaches that get fired. They get the pink slip and we have openings. But the names that are out there right now, and now you add John Harbaugh to that list. Woo. It is going to be very interesting
to
see how all these dots are connected at some point in time. But it's not going to happen today or tomorrow. The Giants are not going to be announcing John Harbaugh as their new head coach by the end of the week. That I can assure you. All right, home stretch of the NFL season, right? Wild card weekend playoffs. Here we go. Regular season is over. Pete Doherty's been running the Times Union picks, NFL picks, every week, and a lot of fun. And we're now down to the stretch run here, and it's pretty tight at the top. Kira from the Times Union is in first place with 176, and then there is two that are tied for second place, myself and Big Game James Allen with 174, so we are a couple behind Kira. So still time, a little log jam at the top with the three of us. We'll see how it all plays out. Pete Doherty, good morning, Pete. How are you?
Good morning. Roger, I have this idea. Why don't we just wipe the slate clean and start new for the playoffs? Just forget what happened in the first 18 weeks.
You would sign up for that immediately, wouldn't you, Pete?
I think so. This is like mathematically eliminated now. Even if you get all the games wrong and I get them all right, I still can't catch you.
It's been one of those years for you. I'm just looking at the current standings. Yeah. And in terms of the head-to-head between, you know, this is kind of a competition individually, yes, but also, you know, the Times Union writers and producers and management people and then the television sports directors in the area. We kind of have head-to-head competition, and you guys continue to lead the way. Just straight-up picks, the Times Union has 674 wins, and TV people have 663. So it is close, but TU wins there. And against the spread, even though we won last week against the spread, you have the edge of 522 to 515 in terms of winning against the spread.
I hate to say this, Roger, but if it weren't for you, we'd be smoking the TV people even worse than we are. I think three of the top four are TU people, everybody but me.
Yeah.
So you're kind of holding things up for them. You need to get your team together and tell them to start picking better.
Yeah, I wish they would, because you're right. It's a drop off, and you guys continue to roll. You do it every year, though. All right, Pete, let's get rolling with this wild card weekend. A lot of great games, a lot of great action, and let's start with the LA Rams. 9.5-point favorites at Carolina. I'm a Carolina fan. I think they can cover this spread, but the Rams are winning and advancing.
Yeah, they certainly are. This starts an interesting trend, though. There's a lot. I think there's four road favorites this weekend, which is unusual for the playoffs because generally the teams that get the home games of the playoffs played better during the season and have the better record, but it's not the not the case. Certainly, I like the Rams. I like the Rams to cover the 9.5. I just think they remember what happened a few weeks ago in the regular season, like losing a game they never should have lost. So, I expect them to. I expect them to cover. Probably not the best game to start out with for the weekend, but they get better as the weekend rolls along.
Yeah, that's a Saturday game, and there's two Saturday games. The other Saturday game will be Green Bay -1.5 going to Chicago. I like the Bears here, Pete. I think I'll give them the advantage because they're at home, and I think this is a very competitive, close game, but I'm going to give a slight edge and 1.5 to the Chicago Bears.
It's one of the two games this weekend. I think it's going to be evenly split among our panel. I like Green Bay. Some people were surprised Green Bay's favored on the road the way they've been playing. But, you know, they got some injured players back. Jordan Love should be playing. The Bears' defense is not very good. And I realize their offense has come around. But I would expect a high-scoring game. I think Green Bay finds a way to win this game. I'll take the experience of the Packers versus the not been in the playoffs for a long time Bears.
Fair enough. All right. On to Sunday's wild card lineup, and it starts with the Buffalo Bills -1.5. It's a 1 o'clock kick, -1.5 going to Jacksonville. And you know what? This Bills team is not as good as I've seen over the last couple of years. I don't know how if Josh Allen is really 100%, but I know how he'll play and he'll figure it out. This could go either way. I could see Jacksonville winning and advancing, but I'm taking the Buffalo Bills to go on the road and get this win.
Yeah, this is the other game that's going to be split among the panel. I've got. I agree with you. I like Buffalo in this game. I know the defense isn't great, but they are the number one defense against the pass. Now, part of that is because teams run on them all the time because their run defense is so poor. But I don't know Jacksonville's running game is all that good. And I think Josh Allen is 100%. And I don't think it's going to be an issue. Could be a high scoring game. And I would certainly like the Bills in a high scoring game if it turns out that way.
All right, let's get to there's two more on Sunday. It's three games on Sunday, and then we'll get to the Monday night game. San Francisco +3.5 at Philadelphia. I'm taking the Eagles to win and move on. And the LA Chargers +3.5 at New England. I'll go with the home team again and say the Patriots will continue their very impressive season under head coach Mike Vrabel.
Yeah, I agree on both. I think the 49ers are too beat up right now to pull off the upset here. I wish they were healthier. They've had an amazing season, but I just don't think they're going to have enough horses to win Saturday. And I like New England to win. Although I think it's going to be a closer game than people might expect. The 3.5-point spread. I'm probably going to give the points, but if it gets the line gets any bigger, I might take those points. Gotta like New England, but again, you wonder about playoff experience. The Patriots don't have it. It'll be interesting to see how they react with the pressure of the playoffs on them.
And then the final stop, Pete, Monday night, Houston -3.5 at Pittsburgh. I'm going to assume a lot of people are going with Houston because of how good they are defensively. But I don't know. I love the way Aaron Rodgers played on Sunday night. I thought he was really good. And they're home. Be a big crowd, loud, crazy atmosphere in Pittsburgh on Monday night. I'm going to say the Steelers win in advance.
Surprisingly, you're not the only one who thinks that way. I'm not in the club, though. I like Houston. The offense is mediocre, but the defense is so good. And I don't know. It seems like at times Aaron Rodgers is doing the mirrors. They do have Metcalf back, which will make a difference. But I like Houston here, and I'll give the 3.5. Hopefully it'll be another good Sunday night game.
Well, the only thing I need, Pete, is for Kira to disagree with us on a couple of these. And we have a chance to maybe, you know, pull into a tie or maybe be only a game back moving into the next round.
Well, for better or worse, I don't think she listens to our segment. So I think, of course, she can just copy your picks, but I don't think she does. So we'll see what happens. You got 13 games left in the regular in the playoffs, so you got to disagree on a few of them anyways. They have a chance to catch her.
Yeah, we still have a shot here. Nice log jam at the top, but it's been a lot of fun all season long. Pete, always a pleasure. Good luck with your picks this weekend. I will say this. I really want it to be the Buffalo Bills year. There's no Kansas City. There's no Baltimore. Come on now. This Bills team is not built like they have been in the past. I don't feel as confident. I mean, I don't think they're as good as the teams that lost to Kansas City in the playoffs. But if there was ever a year, I just kind of feel like this should be it. Let's go Buffalo.
I would think so. They probably aren't as good as they have been in the past, but I also felt like they were the better team last year against Kansas City. Got a couple of bad breaks, I think one from the officiating. They've had a couple of times where they should have won, deserved to win. Now I'm hoping maybe those breaks will go Buffalo's way, and if they're not quite as good, they'll find a way to squeeze out a victory.
Fair enough, Pete. Listen, have a great weekend. Thanks for joining us here for a few minutes on ESPN Radio.
Thanks, Roger. Talk to you next week.
You got it. Pete Doherty, picks are in. All right, it is hour number three on a Thursday, and that means we talk UAlbany women's basketball with head coach Colleen Mullen as we are now in absolute nothing but America East Conference mode. And Coach Mullen joins us here on Big Board Sports. Coach, good afternoon.
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're good. We're good, Coach. Thanks, Coach. We are good. What's the state of your team right now? I know you weren't thrilled with the Vermont performance, although it seems like they made an incredible amount of threes on you on January 1. But you bounced back with a nice win over UMass Lowell.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, today we're on our bye for the week, so it's kind of nice to just take the week to work on ourselves and to kind of clean some things up from, you know, the Vermont game and certainly the UMass Lowell game. But, you know, I think, coming off the holiday break, it's always tough to face, like, the top pick of the league in Vermont and, you know, the repeat from the championship game from last year. And when we came back from the break, Vermont had played Dartmouth after the holiday. So they kind of had a game underneath their belt and they were had their sea legs back a little bit better than us, in terms of the way that we, you know, were able to play for 40 minutes. I mean, we battled with them. We played with them, but we, unfortunately, two of the quarters, we just weren't able to defend the way that we needed to defend to be able to beat a team that has, you know, essentially their entire team back, for all conference players, you know, just completely stacked. So we weren't happy with that, but we learned a lot from that. We were able to take that and get a big win over UMass Lowell, who has a new coach and is much improved with some transfers and some new players on their team and just an athletic style of play. So, and they played us all zone. So we had to transition from, you know, pretty much all player to player against Vermont, and then a kind of a matchup zone against UMass Lowell, but just really proud of our effort. But still focusing on, you know, our defense. We didn't keep either of those teams under 60 points. And that's, of course, always our goal, hanging our hats on defense. So we got to get back to those defensive ways.
Yeah, I wasn't sure whether Vermont made tough contested threes or you weren't happy with your defense and you gave them too many open looks.
Yeah, well, you know, it's tough because they have such a great inside-out attack. They have, you know, the returning MVP of the tournament in Nicola Pride, who's a 6'3", just dynamic post inside. And because they have so many three-point shooters, it's, you know, you have to kind of pick your poison in terms of just how you're going to throw two people at her and defend the paint and defend her inside, but also be able to contest and rotate out to three-point shooters. And, you know, we weren't able to really get into the flow of that in terms of just how we defended. And they hit some big shots. I mean, they hit 13 threes, some of which were uncontested and some of which were just great shots. And they're a talented team. So we'll learn a lot from that. And luckily we have them in another week and a half. So we're kind of playing them back to back here in the first round. So we'll see them in a couple more games. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of, you want to take away the three-point shooters? Well, Nicola Pride's got single coverage inside, or you throw another defender at her. So it's kind of, we'll learn a lot from that film for sure.
What are you getting offensively right now out of your team?
Yeah, I mean, Delaney Hill has just been tremendous.
She's unbelievable, man.
She's just, I know, can you believe her? I just, you know, she's just so impressive in her consistency and stepping up and being the lone starter from last year. I mean, the girl averaged 2 points a game last year and, you know, barely played 20 minutes a game and just really had that kind of, you know, role player mentality and just blended in so well with that really seasoned team that we had last year with so much talent. She just wasn't expected to be that, you know, consistent scorer. And this year she's just stepped up into a new role and 33 points against Vermont, 19 points, you know, against UMass Lowell, and just consistency in her shot, her mid-range game, and just a competitor. So really excited for her. And, you know, UMass Lowell, it was pretty much the Delaney show. Vermont.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
33 points and nobody else scored. But UMass Lowell, we had five players in double figures. That's more of what we need to do. And you know, the strength of our team is the team and moving the ball and having assists and having Delaney have a great game. But we also, it just can't be, you know, one person. We have to be able to have that balanced attack to be able to compete such a difficult conference that we have this year.
And she, and the games I've seen with Delaney, I don't think she forces the action either, right? She's getting this in your flow of your offense, and she'll still make good decisions with the ball. I don't think she forces stuff. She's still scoring her points.
Yeah, no, it's all within the offense. She's been able to really use her kind of body and size. She's a very methodical player. I definitely think she's going to be a coach at some point. Her IQ is just through the roof. She reads the defense, but she's not wowing you with her athleticism or quickness. She's just smart and physical, and she knocks down threes. She's opportunistic, but coming off ball screens, she can pull up. She can finish at the rim. She's using, you know, having great body control, and she's also a terrific passer. So when she gets in there and she draws attention, she's able to kick it out and find the open player and read that second line of defense as they rotate over when she gets a paint touch. And she's just a key piece to this season. And I just couldn't be more happy for the kid. She works so hard. So it's really nice that her hard work's paying off for her.
So you're on the road Saturday, right?
Yep. We're headed to Bryant.
Bryant, yeah. And you told me yesterday when I saw you that they're good this year. Tough matchup.
Oh yeah. They return, Their entire starting lineup just have two really, really dominant posts inside, have some really terrific guard play. So they're shooting a great percentage. Their defense has improved from last year. They got picked third in the league. They're one of the few teams that beat both Maine and Vermont last year. So, you know, they're 12-3. They're just playing very well. Beat Boston College. You know, just all around solid team. So it's gonna we're luckily on the bye and they have a game tonight. So they're gonna have a 1 day prep for us. So we get a little extra time to prepare for them and be a little rested. But it's gonna to be 10 points better on the road at Bryant. It's going to take a full team effort for sure.
All right, you'll figure it out, Coach. I have no doubt that you will. Safe travels. Safe travels. Look forward to seeing you soon, and certainly talk on this platform this time next week.
Thanks so much, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you, Coach. You too. Coach. Colleen Mullen and the Great Danes. Better than expected, I think, this season.
Yeah, and that's good coaching. Colleen Mullen there.
I sing her praises all the time.
Can you not? Yeah. Of course. I mean, she's a good coach.
Read my quick take in the Times Union. I sing her praise. I love the way she coaches.